Hey, welcome to another episode. And first up this week, I'm going to reinforce the importance of us being in nature. So our first reasoning about the deficiency that we have as melanated people here in the Northern Hemisphere. Check it out.
Vitamin D deficiency in melanated people. A health crisis in the Northern Hemisphere. Today, I want to shine a light, quite literally, on a health issue that disproportionately affects melanated people, especially those living in the Northern Hemisphere, vitamin D deficiency. Vitamin D isn't just another nutrient on the checklist. It's essential for bone health, immune function, mood regulation, and even heart health. But here's the issue. Melanin, the pigment that gives our skin its rich, deep tones, acts as a natural sunblock. While that's great for protecting against UV damage, it also means that we don't synthesize vitamin D from sunlight as efficiently as lighter-skinned individuals. Combine that with reduced sun exposure due to climate, indoor living, and harmful dietary habits, and we're looking at a serious deficiency epidemic. What does deficiency look like? Low levels of vitamin D can cause fatigue, bone pain, muscle weakness, depression, hair loss, and an increased risk of chronic diseases such as hypertension, diabetes, and autoimmune disorders. For melanated women, the consequences can be even more severe, including higher risks of osteoporosis, pregnancy complications, and hormonal imbalances. The so-called healthy habits that are hurting us. Western health trends often push practices that, instead of helping, are actually making this issue worse for melanated people. Calcium supplements. While calcium is important for bone health, it needs vitamin D to be absorbed properly. Without enough vitamin D, that extra calcium can build up in the arteries instead of strengthening bones. Low-fat diets. Many people are conditioned to avoid dietary fats, but healthy fats help the body absorb vitamin D more effectively. Excessive indoor living. Modern lifestyles keep us indoors, whether at work, school, or home. Combine that with sunscreen use, and we lose the natural vitamin D boost from sunlight. Western diet patterns. Many staple Western foods lack adequate nutrients for melanated people, including vitamin D and magnesium, which is critical for vitamin D absorption. Breaking free and building better habits. So how do we address this? Here are some powerful lifestyle shifts that can help. 1. Sun exposure. Aim for 15 to 30 minutes of direct sunlight daily, depending on skin tone, preferably in the morning or afternoon. 2. Dietary changes. Incorporate vitamin D-rich foods such as fatty fish, egg yolks, liver, mushrooms, and fortified foods. 3. Supplement smartly. Consider vitamin D3 supplements, especially in winter months, paired with magnesium to aid absorption. 4. Healthy fats. Embrace sources like avocado, nuts, seeds, and olive oil to improve vitamin D metabolism. 5. Active outdoor time. Prioritize outdoor exercise, even if it's just a short walk. 6. Community awareness. Share this knowledge. Many people don't realize they're affected, and education is the first step to change. Addressing this deficiency isn't just about individual health. It's about reclaiming wellness tailored to our unique biological needs. The more we understand and correct these harmful habits, the more we thrive.
Well, I sure hope that you all have plans on enjoying the outdoors, enjoying Mother Nature. That's what we're supposed to be part of anyway, right? And we're going to have a short reasoning now on Other Church. Da-na-na-na. Yeah, let's see what they're talking about.
The case against reparations. Why the church commissioners for England must think again. The Church of England has recently proposed a £100 million reparations program to address its historical ties to the transatlantic slave trade. However, a new report from Policy Exchange argues that this initiative is poorly justified, historically uninformed, and ultimately inadvisable. The core argument against reparations. The report, authored by Charles Wide, KC, the Rev. Professor Lord Bigger and Dr. Alcasegal Cuthbert, present several key reasons why the church commissioners should reconsider their approach. First, a departure from core duties. The church commissioners are responsible for managing church funds to support parishes and clergy. The report argues that diverting money toward reparations strays from their primary mission and misuses resources intended for church operations. Second, historical and legal concerns. The authors claim that the church's reparations plan lacks strong historical evidence linking its financial assets directly to the slave trade. They argue that the legal justification for reparations is weak, making the initiative more symbolic than substantive. Third, divisiveness and misuse of funds. The report warns that reparations could create division rather than healing. It suggests that focusing on modern social issues such as poverty, education, and community development would be a more effective use of church funds. Criticism of the church's approach. The Church of England's reparations plan, known as Project Spire, aims to invest in communities affected by the legacy of slavery. However, critics argue that the initiative is based on flawed historical assumptions, prioritizes activism over balanced decision-making, and risks alienating church members who believe funds should be used for religious and community purposes. Alternative solutions. Instead of reparations, the report suggests that the church should focus on present-day inequalities rather than historical grievances, invest in education and social programs that benefit disadvantaged communities, and strengthen its core mission of supporting parishes and clergy. Final thoughts. The debate over reparations is complex, touching on history, morality, and financial responsibility. While the Church of England seeks to address past injustices, critics argue that its approach is misguided and potentially harmful to its mission. The report urges the church commissioners to rethink their strategy and consider alternative ways to promote justice and reconciliation.
Well, well, well. Definitely not surprised. So, yeah. About life, that thing we call life. It's always a mystery, right? Let's see how the fern, our first tree, how is dealing with it.
Here's a fascinating study on ferns and their ability to evolve backward. Ferns, the plants that defy evolutionary rules. For centuries, scientists believed that evolution was a one-way street. Once a species developed specialized traits, it could not revert to a more primitive form. This idea, known as Dalo's Law, has shaped much of evolutionary biology. However, new research on chain ferns, Blechnaceae, challenges this assumption, suggesting that some plants can reverse their evolutionary specialization and return to simpler forms. The study and its findings. Researchers at the University of Tennessee analyzed over 118 species of chain ferns, focusing on their reproductive strategies. They found that ferns exhibit two distinct modes. One, monomorphism. A single leaf performs both photosynthesis and spore production. Two, dimorphism. Separate leaves specialize in either photosynthesis or reproduction. Traditionally, scientists believed that once a fern evolved dimorphism, it would not revert to monomorphism. However, the study revealed multiple instances where ferns had developed dimorphism and later reverted back to monomorphism. This suggests that evolution is not strictly linear. Instead, it can shift based on environmental pressures. Why can ferns evolve backward? Unlike most plants, ferns do not produce seeds. Instead, they reproduce using spores, which allows them to modify their reproductive structures more flexibly. Researchers hypothesize that seed-producing plants are locked into their complexity, making it difficult to revert to simpler forms. But because ferns rely on spores, they can adapt their leaf structures to best suit their environment. Implications for evolutionary theory. This discovery challenges the long-held belief that specialization is irreversible. It suggests that evolution is not a straight path. It can loop back or reverse under certain conditions. Some species may shed complexity if it no longer provides an advantage. The absence of seeds in ferns may be a key factor in their ability to evolve backward. Final thoughts. As Assistant Professor Jacob S. Suissa puts it, evolution has no finish line. There is no end goal, no final state. This study opens new doors in evolutionary biology, showing that nature is more flexible than we once thought.
Okay, very interesting. The more you know, right? So let's look at the other side across the pond. We're going to look at the church and their dealings with the U.S. right now.
The Episcopal Church has recently made significant decisions regarding its financial and social commitments, including divestment from certain U.S. government programs. This move is largely tied to ethical concerns and a reassessment of its role in social justice. Why is the Episcopal Church divesting? The Episcopal Church has historically engaged in socially responsible investing, ensuring that its financial decisions align with its values. Two major reasons for its divestment from U.S. government programs have emerged. First, fossil fuel divestment. The church has completed its divestment from the fossil fuel industry, following a decade-long commitment to environmental sustainability. This decision was driven by concerns over climate change and the church's desire to reinvest in clean energy alternatives. Second, refugee resettlement program withdrawal. The church recently ended its partnership with the U.S. government's refugee resettlement program. This decision was prompted by the Trump administration's policy prioritizing the resettlement of white South African refugees, which the church viewed as racially discriminatory. The church cited its commitment to racial justice and reconciliation as the primary reason for withdrawing from the program. The ethical and social implications. The Episcopal Church's divestment reflects its broader mission to uphold ethical standards in financial and social engagements. By stepping away from fossil fuel investments, it reinforces its commitment to environmental stewardship. Similarly, its withdrawal from the refugee resettlement program signals a refusal to participate in policies it views as racially unjust. Potential consequences. Financial impact. The church's decision to divest from fossil fuels and government refugee programs may lead to financial restructuring, requiring alternative funding sources for its social initiatives. Political and social influence. These moves position the Episcopal Church as a leading voice in ethical investment and social justice, potentially influencing other religious institutions to follow suit. Community engagement. The church has pledged to continue supporting refugees through private initiatives, ensuring that its humanitarian efforts remain intact despite the loss of government funding. Final thoughts. The Episcopal Church's divestment from U.S. government programs is a bold statement of its values. Whether addressing climate change or racial justice, these decisions reflect a commitment to ethical leadership and social responsibility. As the church navigates these changes, its influence on faith-based activism and responsible investing will likely continue to grow.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know what? We're just gonna wrap it up. And until next time, when we meet at the crossroads. Peace.